5:10. Do you have trouble sleeping? Do you have insomnia? You got to get up at this hour. Do you toss and turn a lot? I have a tip for you this morning. If you're like me, you fall asleep a lot when you watch television, right? Okay. But, you know, you have the TV on, or you have your iPad on, or you're watching your phone. You know, they say that blue light or whatever it is not conducive to sleeping. So here's my tip this morning for you. Just put the remote control in your hand. You don't have to turn anything on. Just the remote control in your hand will make you sleepy, and all will be well. What do you think?
I think it's worth a try. You know, I mean, it can't hurt, right?
I think it works.
Yeah, okay.
I think it works. You know, you need to take a nap. Just grab the remote. Don't turn anything on. Just hold the remote in your hand. It's sort of a Pavlovian response, I think.
Okay.
Make sure it's germ-free first.
Well, yeah. You're not in a hotel.
It doesn't matter.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
I wipe my remotes at home all the time, keyboards, like at least once a week.
How many people you have living in your house, Mary?
There's just three of us. But, you know,
you know,
people come over. There's germs.
Something similar I do, Bob, is I rent a movie on pay-per-view, and then within about 3 minutes of watching that, I fall asleep.
Yeah,
never fails. Never fails.
Right. I know. You know what? There have been shows, I kid you not, I swear it's true. I kid a little, but I never lie. There are shows, some movies that whenever they're on cable, I like to watch a little bit of it. You know, like Goodfellas is one of them. Whenever it comes on, I have to watch some of it. But there are some movies that, and also some television programs that I have recorded, and I fall asleep at the same point each time in the show. At the same point, I get so excited. I'm thinking, you know, I fell asleep 20 minutes in, and I'm going to watch this now, and I'm going to see it. And then, sure enough, same point, I'm asleep.
Like Groundhog Day.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I have to sleep with the TV on. I put the little sleep timer on, and usually watch something very light, like you know, reruns of Friends or something that I've seen 100,000 times. Don't have to pay attention to it. I just know it's on in the background.
Well, you see now, if you fall asleep watching Friends, just make sure, record it, and then whenever you want to sleep, put Friends on.
Yeah.
That's how it works here.
There you go.
A lot of science we pass on to you here in the morning here. Good to have you with us. I'm Bob Cerrotta. It's 5:13. We're all assembled. Andy's here for Dave. Mary's in Traffic Central, or the Traffic Center, that's what it is.
Or the Traffic Hut, as some people call it.
Yeah, the bunker. And Steve's in the newsroom. First caller on the radio gets a prize. We'll get to that momentarily at 312-981-7200. You can try your luck at that. Meantime, over to Courtney Guzman, covering yesterday's aftermath today of yesterday's West Madison Street shooting. Good morning, Courtney. How you doing today?
Hey, Bob. Good. How are you? Happy Thursday.
Yes. Anything more about the condition of the officer or the suspect?
So we know that the officer is doing well. He's here at Stroger Hospital recovering. We expect that he will be released later today. You know, he was shot in the wrist. This is actually a sergeant who was working undercover on another case right around the 4,000 block of West Madison with Lou Pulaski. While he was working on this undercover case, he witnessed another shooting, saw another man shoot and kill another man on a sidewalk there, and he intervened. He went after the shooter. That shooter ended up hopping out of the vehicle that he was in and firing into the unmarked police car, and he shot that sergeant, that undercover sergeant, in the wrist. So backup was called. Officers ended up trying to transport the sergeant to the hospital, and as they were en route, they ran into this pickup truck that had the shooter again. So they asked that sergeant, what do you want to do? Do you want to go after this guy, or do you want to go to the hospital? Because he had a bullet in his wrist. The sergeant said, I want to go after this guy, and that's what they did. They ended up chasing this guy. He ended up slamming into a tree, tried to get out and run, and they arrested him. So he is now in custody. We don't know anything about the man, the shooter, this alleged shooter who's now in custody. We just know that he will be facing charges, but as for this sergeant, We know his family has been surrounding him at the hospital. He has children that he's been communicating with since he's been here. He's in his early 40s with more than 20 years of experience on CPD. And like I said, he is doing well, expected to be released later on today. Mayor Lori Lightfoot singing his praises, saying that if he hadn't intervened, there could have been other fatalities in relation to that shooting that he witnessed. So, yeah, very interesting, and we're waiting to see what charges will come down against this alleged shooter.
I really liked what the mayor said about the work of the Chicago Police Department, because Lord knows we hear a lot about the bad apples in the bunch, and you're always going to get that, but you don't hear about all the good work they do. And fortunately, we're hearing a lot about this story. But, you know, every day the men and women on the Chicago Police Force do terrific work, and if you try to praise them, if you compliment them when you see them, they always say the same thing: hey, this is just what we do. And you're always going to have problems. You have to recruit from the human race, and the fact is, though, 99.9% of the folks on the force are terrific Chicagoans who do unbelievable work and help people 24/7. So I really enjoyed what the mayor said. I thought she was right on, especially on this, on this case.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot, her direct quote is, "Our officers are courageous, are fearless, selfless, and run toward danger to serve the public." She was quite proud of these officers and how they responded. And by the way, no shots were ever fired by CPD regarding this entire incident yesterday. They did this without firing any shots.
Yeah, well, you know, the nature of what we do on TV and on radio and with the news is you get the negative stories. You're not going to have a story on the 9 o'clock news on Channel 9, you know, police officer rescues dog from house. You know, it's the nature of the business.
Do.
Well, once in a while.
We have more with the human nature, though. Officers going above and beyond the call of duty. We do those stories, and we're proud to do those stories on WGN. It's just that, unfortunately, in this city, there is so much crime that we try to tackle on a daily basis, and it gets, a lot of times it does get lost.
Yeah.
But, this is something that definitely, when it happens, you want to pay attention to it. And you know, like you mentioned, the mayor is certainly singing the praises of the officers who were involved in this, particularly that sergeant who stepped up to intervene. And when he saw something was going down, departed from his original task and moved towards something that he thought was much more important here after this man was shot, killed on the sidewalk yesterday.
Yeah. He was an undercover cop. He's an undercover cop, right? The officer.
Correct.
Who got shot. All right, there you go. There's the latest. Thank you, Courtney. You have a good day.
Okay, you too, Bob. Take care.
It is 5:24 almost, and this is Michael from Joliet. Good morning, Michael. You're the first caller to get on the radio here on the show today. You win.
Great. It's good to talk to you, Bob. Good to hear you back on the radio.
Oh, good to talk to you, Mike. What do you do for a living?
Ironically, I'm a police officer after that story that just followed there from Courtney Guzman.
Are you an officer out in Joliet?
I'm in the Joliet area, yes.
Well, good for you. What I said goes for you folks, too, not just the people here in the city. Are you going to work today, Mike?
I'm on my way there now. We work 12-hour shifts, so we start at 6 a.m. and we finish at 6 p.m.
And how is the world of crime in Joliet today?
You never really know what the day is going to bring your way.
No, you don't.
You get in your squad and you hope that you go home at the end of the night.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Well, you know what? Can't say enough about the work all of you do all the time. How about some tickets to the Tinley Park Golf Show?
I personally don't golf, but I know people that do, and I'm sure that I can find someone that would be more than happy to use those tickets.
February 7th through the 9th at the Tinley Park Convention Center. Yesterday, we tried to give these away, too. Browse aisles of newly released equipment and apparel from Chicagoland's top retailers. It's really a good deal. Get info at TinleyParkConventionCenter.net. All right, we'll get you those tickets. And, you know, Mike, because of what you do to serve and protect, after I put you on hold and we get your information there, if you want something else, talk to Joe the engineer or Vivian the producer, and we'll set you up.
I appreciate that very much.
All right. You have a good day, Michael, and thanks for listening, and thanks for calling, and congrats being the first caller today. Hold on now.
Thank you.
And it's almost 5:26. Quickly here, Andy Mazur for Dave Bennett today on sports. The Chris Bryant thing, now this makes it more likely he'll be traded. Is that, do I have this right?
I think you do have it right, because if he had won the grievance, he'd have been a free agent actually at the end of this year. Now he's under control for two seasons, so the 2020 season and also 2021. Makes it a little more attractive for another team to, you know, be able to acquire his services this year. They have him for two, and then they can figure out if they want to negotiate a long-term deal. But the Cubs can do the same thing.
Right. Got it. And the Mitch Trubisky story, the shoulder surgery, are we now, are we all thinking, well, the guy did a better job than we thought because he was playing with this problem?
It's possible. I mean, I think that might have limited his running a little bit because it was his non-throwing shoulder. He got hurt in the game against the Vikings at Soldier Field and then missed a week or two and then came back. So, I mean, I think it was probably a foregone conclusion he'd have to have something done. It's the second straight year he's hurt that shoulder. And get it fixed now. And, you know, the Bears are certainly heavily counting on him again. They pretty much named him the starter already after the postseason press conference, with a lot of fans moaning and groaning. But that's right. Kind of the way that things go.
Your colleague Adam Hogue is in Miami covering the Super Bowl. We'll talk to him later on this morning. I think they're running out of people to interview there. They're interviewing each other. Now, the broadcasters are interviewing each other.
That's usually when you know you've been there for a long time. I remember covering the Super Bowl when the Bears were there in Miami, and I don't remember ever seeing the light of day.
No, they do work.
Yeah, they work hard. I mean, it's and Adam posted something yesterday about having a lunch break at the beach.
Oh,
so I mean, it's
poor Adam.
You know, you take the good with the bad, right? And you enjoy the beach, and then get back to work.
Hey, if you're having a Super Bowl party Sunday, you might want to move it to the backyard. They're talking about temperatures maybe in the 50s on Sunday. How about that?
Yeah, wasn't it a few Super Bowl Sundays ago that we got like 15 inches of snow? I think it was 2015 or something like that.
Yeah, and
so let's take it.
A year ago today, temperature minus 23. I think the high was like 10 below on this day a year ago. So I know we're complaining because we haven't seen the sun in a long time, but it could be a lot worse, right?
Absolutely.
Coming up later on the broadcast, we'll be talking about that American Lung Association stair climb. Now, Dave Bennett is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you climbing stairs?
Usually what happens is working with Dean's show on Sunday, we're there live covering the aftermath. And the beginning. We're live on the scene to give you exactly all the huffing, all the puffing.
You give Annett oxygen?
Yeah, you know, we give him a cup of coffee when he's done and let him come on the radio as well.
Okay. Well,
so in a longabout way, no, I'm not going to participate in it. I'm going to sit it out and be a spectator.
I'm registered to participate.
Oh, you are, Mary? Mm-hmm. You're doing it? Have you done it before?
I've done it 6 times.
Well, good for you. And let's see, how many flights of stairs?
A lot of flights, 2,340 steps. I forgot how many flights exactly, but it's four buildings,
right?
All four presidential. You don't have to do all four. But, you know, you're kind of looked upon to try, at least, to do all four.
We have a lot
There's a lot of peer pressure.
We have a lot of stairs where we live, so I guess I'm in training. And remember last week, there was some health tip about climbing stairs. Do it on your tiptoes to strengthen your legs.
Okay.
So I've been doing that.
Hurts my calves, though.
Well, but it'll build them up.
Of course,
if you've done that stair climb every year, that, mm-hmm. I mean, you're ready to go. I'm still training.
I don't think you're ever really ready to go, you know? It's tough. I'll tell you, it's tough. But once you do it, you feel great.
Hey, you save a lot of money on the Stairmaster. Here's a quick agribusiness update from Orion.
Good morning. Market activity yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange found hog and cattle contracts dropping to multi-month lows. And at the end of the trading day, April live cattle futures were down 47 cents a hundredweight. Feeder cattle ended down 42 cents a hundredweight. And the lean hog contract at the CME down $1.92 a hundredweight in yesterday's trade. Taking a look at the grain market, traders still waiting for soybean purchases by China, but it looks like we may be waiting a while because of the coronavirus situation. Wheat futures fell 1.5% yesterday on a round of follow-through selling after the technical setback on Tuesday. And at the end of the day, we saw wheat down 8 cents a bushel, March corn down 2 cents a bushel, and March soybeans down 2.25 cents a bushel. Finally, after starts and stops over the last year or so, President Trump signed the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement yesterday, and it still has a ways to go before it becomes reality because Canada still has to ratify the agreement that has been approved by the three countries involved in that gathering. The auto workers were enthusiastic about the deal, but they said it would not restore hundreds of thousands of U.S. manufacturing jobs lost to Mexico after NAFTA. They vowed to be aggressive in pushing for enforcement of the trade agreement's provisions. That's the AgBiz story for this morning. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
5:39. Thank you, Orion. Blackhawks get back in action on Saturday night, right,
Andy? Correct. They'll be in Arizona.
I saw in the Sun-Times a report on a series of Twitter polls that were, I guess, flying around social media yesterday, and they asked some Blackhawks questions, and let's see here. Fans are nearly unanimous in favor of Robin Lehner over Corey Crawford.
Okay.
And long-term optimism still abounds. Playoff optimism was roughly in line with the actual odds. Now the odds are tough right now.
Yeah,
right? Because they're how many games?
Well, they're 3 points behind the both the Vegas Knights and also the Coyotes for the two wild card spots. They're tied for fourth right now in the Central. Earlier in the year, the percentage for playoff possibility was 7%. I believe it's up to 35 now.
Let's see.
They're doing all right.
So they have a 32-game stretch run now, right?
Right. And a lot of road games in February, a lot of home games in March.
Right. February schedule, 14 games, including 11 on the road. Wow.
But they've been a good road team this year. That early in the season when they were playing so well, it was mostly on the road. They were having a hard time winning games at home. I think they've turned a little bit of that around as well. So they're hoping for some good fortune on the road in February, and then build into a lot of home games in March.
And back to Corey Crawford, do we think this is his last year in Chicago?
It seems that way. If he's not willing to take a little slash in pay, he's making six at this point, and Robin Lehner has certainly shown himself very well this year with the Blackhawks. So I would have to say that they may even look to trade him. It's a possibility of the trade deadline.
You know, I cannot understand salary caps and all of these rules that govern not just hockey, but all the sports now.
And they're all different. Their rules are different in each of the sports because in the NBA, you can go over the cap to sign your own free agents. There's a hard cap. I mean, you cannot go over the cap in the NHL. There's penalties for that. And you can't. There's also a floor. You have to spend at least X amount to have your payroll. I think it's a $42 or $43 million.
Yeah, and the whole deal behind the Chris Bryant issue has to do with the luxury tax threshold, doesn't it?
Yeah, luxury tax and also just service time, because there's a collective bargaining agreement in place that says if you wait a certain amount of time in the season that you're going to be called up, if you wait 2 weeks, the team owns your rights for 6 years as opposed to five. So when he came up in 2015, the Cubs waited, I think it was April 17th mm-hmm. that they brought him up. Mm-hmm. So that satisfied the requirement under the collective bargaining agreement to keep him around under team control until 2021. Now, he contends, and he filed the grievance, that it was done against the rules of the collective bargaining agreement, but the arbitrator apparently did not agree.
All the teams do that, don't they?
Yeah, the White Sox are one of the few teams that get around it by actually signing guys to deals that kind of buy out that year. Eloy Jimenez signed a 6-year deal before he started in the big leagues. Luis Robert is doing the same thing. You go back to the days of Chris Sale; they did the same thing with him. So there are ways around it, but there are other teams that say, "Well, if it's part of the rules of the game, we should be able to do what we need to do within the rules of the game."
I have to check with my softball team manager to find out where I stand this season. I'm not sure.
You got service time issues?
I got all kinds of issues. Now, Steve Grzanich for our weekly Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversation.
We're here with Dan Behrens, who's the SVP of Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader this morning. Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
I want to begin with something, because we're always trying to educate our listeners in these conversations. Tell us what speculative real estate development is.
Sure. Speculative real estate development, or spec development, as some people can call it, is the development of any kind of asset class without having a lease in place. So if it's an industrial building, developers will start construction prior to having a lease in place. A lot of people can think it's a little riskier. Obviously, there's not a tenant identified for that building. So it's among the more rare types of development, but one that's pretty popular. Even now, in the development cycle we're in now, even office buildings are starting speculative development prior to signing leases up.
Well, and it's very popular. I mean, I pulled one article that talked a little bit about this in the Chicago area, especially the end of 2019, the last part of 2019, there was quite a bit of this development speculation, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a couple of the office buildings downtown, particularly Fulton Market, have done a lot of spec development. It's worked out well, and industrial is the same thing. I mean, speculative development's not new. It's not a new phenomenon, but mm-hmm. it's definitely something that is gained a lot more traction, a lot more popularity in this current development cycle.
The people that are involved in this, are they seeing something that we're not in some of these buildings and properties? Do they know something that we don't? Or how do we remain as investors, for example, and you as a bank, how do you know that these developments are going to pay out?
Well, it really goes back to the fundamentals of real estate, really just location. And you have to trust your developers that they're picking the right locations. They do this for a living. They know what locations are going to be successful and what may not be. They know the tenants. They know brokers who can bring tenants. And, you know, they feel that if the building goes up, you know, they think there's a high probability that, you know, if they can build it to their quality, the tenants will certainly release.
You mentioned the Fulton Market. That's sort of a no-brainer for investors, that you see that and you see the development all around there. You know that that's going places. But are there places where it's not that cut and dry?
I mean, even in the Loop, it's not cut and dry. I mean, I think some of the new office developments, BMO Tower, for example, just south of Union Station, that didn't start out as speculative development. I mean, the building that's going up now, B of A's Tower on Wacker, that wasn't speculative. So, I mean, there are very few instances or few locations, particularly for office space, that you'll want to go speculative on. The buildings in Fulton Market aren't, you know, 800,000 square feet. A lot of them are smaller chunks of space that need to be leased. So you don't have the huge capital outlays, and you don't have the as much risk if you can't find a tenant. You're not servicing 600,000 square feet of, you know, office space that's empty.
Mm-hmm. There's another story that sort of ties into the local commercial real estate scene. And it involves the developers of some big projects like Vista Tower and Lincoln Yards, Bank of America Tower. They're putting their money in other developments in other cities. And the headline from the Tribune said some of them were saying, we love Chicago, but are super nervous. How concerned should we be about this story?
I certainly think this is it's a big concern. Developers, I mean, in the normal life cycle of a developer, I mean, they're going to spread out. They're not just going to focus on one submarket. There's just too much risk associated with one market or submarket. They're going to extend their boundaries to spread the risk out geographically. That's not overly surprising. It's nothing new. But I think what investors and developers and myself as in a banking field, you're nervous about the climate that Chicago's portraying, I guess, to national investors and international investors. It's not a pro-development city right now, at least in my opinion. And a lot of people cite the uncertainty in real estate taxes, which you and I have talked about plenty of times in the past. Nobody likes uncertainty, and certainly not with real estate taxes. I mean, that's the largest expense line in any commercial real estate project or any budget. And if you don't know where your taxes are going to be in 1 year, 2 years, and 15 years down the road, a lot of developers and a lot of institutional invested capital isn't going to invest their money in Chicago. So they'll go to safer areas that have larger population increases. I think I heard recently that Chicago's had the fourth year in a row of a decreasing population. It's just not the right environment if you're an institutional investor to put money in right now.
But that said, the economy is firing on all cylinders right now. What does this say about the state of things if these developments can't happen in an economy like we're having now?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of these developers and developments have happened in what has been the longest development cycle, the positive development cycle in U.S. history. I mean, it's pretty unprecedented. And so it's not uncommon that, you know, these developers have experienced the success. I mean, I think the developments have been successful even in spite of the city or some headwinds that are facing some of the developers now. But where the business climate is in Chicago and Cook County, it's just not as favorable as other markets.
One of the areas that is seeing a lot of this development, where these people are moving their money and their developments to, again, the South, places like Austin and Atlanta and Dallas and Nashville. Also, the story mentions Denver, Los Angeles, and Miami. Is this a trend that could turn around if we see some changes in things like, for instance, taxes, like you talked about?
I think it certainly can turn around. I think the city's trying to do a better job of increasing population, at least downtown. I think that's got to filter out to the surrounding communities, into the neighborhoods. The city has to do a better job, and developers, frankly, have to do a better job of encouraging development in other areas that aren't just the CBD and the near-in central business district. So I think it certainly can turn around, and I think the city has to become a little more development friendly in order to do that.
Dan, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Anytime, they can call me at 312-544-4657 or daniel.barons@associatedbank.com.
Thanks for coming in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Dan Barons is the Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, January the 30th. GDP growth for the fourth quarter of 2019 is due out today. Economists expect no change from the third quarter. They're forecasting annualized growth of 2.1%. The number's out at 7:30 Chicago time, along with the latest look at first-time claims for unemployment benefits. Analysts expect to see 216,000 people filing for those initial claims last week, up 5,000 from the week before. Also today, Bank of England interest rate decision, earnings, lots of earnings today from Amazon, Blackstone, Coca-Cola, Hershey Foods, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, Royal Dutch Shell, UPS, Verizon, Levi Strauss, U.S. Steel, and Visa. Lots of things that could move the markets on Thursday, January 30th.
Thank you, Steve. We were talking about building projects in the city. Plans to turn the site of the last Sears store in Chicago into more than 400 apartments and townhomes, as well as retail space, all set to move forward there on the northwest side. The alderman of the 45th Ward, Jim Gardner, said he is beyond thrilled with a revised version of a project he said could bring new residents and foot traffic to that intersection that was once one of the city's major retail hubs, but now looks run down, in his words. He said, I think it's going to bring a lot of energy. Talking at a community meeting this week to discuss that proposal, he's all optimistic about it. The project will be at the intersection of Milwaukee, Cicero, and Irving Park. The updated version of the $200 million project made some changes to the look of the former Sears store, reduced the height of an apartment building, and includes a few more affordable housing units than a version presented at a similar community meeting in December. The former department store building has been vacant since Sears closed it in 2018, 2 months shy of their 80th anniversary. So that's a big project for the intersection of Milwaukee, Cicero, and Irving Park. Has somebody informed Mr. Robach about this? Whatever happened to him, anyway? Well, we have some breaking junk food news. You knew this was going to happen eventually. KFC announces Beyond Fried Chicken. That's right. Plant-based fried chicken. More on that coming up. How you doing on time? It's 10 after 6. So I'm driving up Clark Street over the weekend, and I make a left turn at Ridge, and I realize it's left on arrow only, and the arrow is red. So I stop immediately a little past the crosswalk, and I back up. And as I'm backing up, I see the flash of that red light camera. But here's my question. I didn't go through. I backed up. They got me, don't they?
More than likely.
Nailed.
Yeah.
That's the consensus here from everybody?
Yep. Unfortunately, yes.
You've been having a lot of car issues lately,
I know,
Bob.
I know.
With your windshield, now this.
I was so aggravated because, first of all, I didn't see the sign that said red light camera enforced or photo enforced or whatever it says. So I didn't see that. But here's my defense. I didn't go through. I backed up. I went past the line, but I didn't make my left on the red arrow. I backed up before I completed the turn, Your Honor.
Backing up is dangerous too because you can hit somebody or
well,
a pedestrian or another.
There's
car.
Nobody behind me.
Well,
I looked.
Yeah. Well, some people don't.
Yeah, I'm going to be getting something in the mail soon. That's like $100.
$100.
Isn't it? Yeah. And you can't really fight those, can you?
You can't really talk to the camera, can you? Just say, excuse me, I didn't really go through. Didn't you get the picture when I backed up? Come
well,
on.
I'm going to contest by mail and write that the picture was taken as I was backing up. I didn't go through it.
Yeah. Picture was taken out of context.
I think we got like an out of bounds situation when you cross over that line. You're technically out of bounds even if you do back in, right?
Wait a minute, Steve. I'm writing down Andy's line. Picture taken out of context.
That might work.
I always think that maybe you're better off during the holiday season contesting those because you know they're in the Christmas mood. But I'll keep you posted on that. And then you can't. It's too expensive, and it's too much trouble to go to court. It used to be in the old days. I used to be down there at 321 North Clark, or whatever it was, traffic court. You could sit in the front and hear how they were ruling on certain cases, hear what the judge was saying, and then base your defense on that. That used to be very amusing. But now it's a whole computerized system, and, you know, you can't fight City Hall.
Nope.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Surratt on WGN Radio.
6:17, Vanessa Bryant made her first public comment yesterday since the helicopter crash that killed her husband, one of their daughters, and seven others. She took to Instagram to thank people for the global outpouring of support since the tragedy. She also announced the formation of a fund, Mamba on Three, to help support the other families that were affected by the crash. Here's what she wrote. Thank you for all the prayers. We definitely need them. We are completely devastated by the sudden loss of my adoring husband, Kobe, the amazing father of our children, and my beautiful, sweet Gianna, a loving, thoughtful, and wonderful daughter, an amazing sister to Natalia, Bianca, and Capri. We are also devastated for the families who lost their loved ones on Sunday, and we share in their grief intimately.
Now, page 2.
The number of known coronavirus cases has jumped to 7,771 in China this morning, including the first confirmed case in Tibet. The global total now 8,000. The epidemic's death toll also continued to rise sharply. 38 since yesterday. The total is 170, all in China. The coronavirus believed to have originated last month in that market that sold wild animals in Wuhan. As news on the coronavirus progresses, Facebook says it's working with fact-checking partners to debunk misleading information about the virus that's circulating around the internet. This is a big problem. Twitter and TikTok have also said they're taking steps to curb the spread of all that misinformation.
Page 3.
And Facebook is settling allegations that its facial recognition practices violate Illinois privacy rights by paying $550 million to users in the state. The lawsuit was filed in Illinois in 2015, alleging that Facebook violated Illinois privacy regulations with a feature that suggested to users other people to tag in their photos. Facebook replaced the tag suggestion tool with a broader facial recognition setting last year. Each user that is part of the class action settlement could receive a couple of hundred dollars from Facebook. I'll tell you, it's really getting freaky because the other day, as I mentioned here, I had a car windshield issue. And so I was Googling broken windshields. And so what comes up almost immediately on my Facebook feed? Ads for Safe Life Glass. Isn't that crazy how they do that?
It's crazy to Google anything.
I mean, really. And then, as for the class action suit, you ever get one of those cards, you're part of a class action suit? They make it so complicated and so hard to get involved in that. You just end up tossing those away and not, you know, I don't know, you know. I like the ones that say, you do nothing and you're part of the class action suit. I can handle that. But the other ones, I mean, I think they purposely make it even too hard to read the card, you know, because they don't want to part with the money. All right, let's move
on. Page four.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. If you still have questions about Illinois' new marijuana laws, you can get them answered this weekend in Chicago. The city is holding a cannabis resource fair Saturday at UIC. Mayor Lightfoot will headline a panel discussion on Saturday, kicking off the city's first cannabis resource fair. Industry entrepreneurs, lawmakers, and legal experts will be on hand to field questions. The fair is a way for people to know their rights and learn how to find work or business opportunities in the cannabis industry. They can also get legal assistance for prior cannabis-related convictions. That fair will be 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at the UIC Forum, 725 West on Roosevelt Road.
Stand by for news.
President Trump's impeachment defense strategy has shifted again. The president's impeachment lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, now claims that not only are certain forms of quid pro quo not impeachable offenses, but that they're okay if the president is attempting to get reelected because getting reelected is acting in the interest of the nation. If witnesses are allowed, some suggest calling Hunter Biden to the stand. The Trump administration also ramping up efforts to attack former National Security Advisor and potential trial witness John Bolton. His memoir includes key allegations that could implicate President Trump in the Ukraine scandal.
Don't it may concern.
This is our favorite story of the day, isn't it? KFC announced they're continuing and expanding their test of plant-based chicken. Months after the chicken chain sold out of the new Beyond Fried Chicken at one Atlanta restaurant in less than 5 hours, it's expanding the test to more than 70 locations. Now, they mention Charlotte, North Carolina, and Nashville, Tennessee, so I guess they're working the South. Let me check in with Steve Grzanich in the newsroom. He's manning the Breaking Junk Food Department, Breaking Junk Food News Department. Not Chicago for this yet, Steve?
Not Chicago for this yet, no. Again, we're not one of those test markets, but soon.
The expanded test will start February 3rd. Will be available through February 23rd in those cities while supplies last. The meat alternative is available in 4 to 12 pieces or as a combo and with a dipping sauce or tossed in one of three sauce options, Nashville hot, buffalo, or honey barbecue.
I just have one follow-up on this. Do they shape the plant-based meat into a chicken bone or chicken shape, or how is this going to look?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure it's like the McDonald's rib sandwich, oh,
yeah.
Right? McRib.
Yeah. Where it actually looks like it has bones in it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't bring this up when we talked to Orion Samuelson yesterday. That would have been interesting. So look for that at KFC. Plant-based chicken. And, of course, it tastes like chicken.
Yep.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirott on WGN Radio.
Good day.
Beyond Fried Chicken. Okay, it's 6:24. We were talking yesterday about the Super Bowl prop bets. Have you been hearing about about all of these bets. These are the bets that they make about everything that happens besides what's going on the field. For example, will Betty White be in the Snickers commercial? Will Gloria Estefan make an appearance on stage? Will Demi Lovato omit a word from the national anthem? Will Tom Brady be mentioned? People actually bet on these things, don't they?
They do, and they do that more than they do the actual betting line on the game. Especially if you're a Bears fan and you really don't have much else to really watch the game for, no, why not have a little fun?
We're rooting for Robbie Gould.
Yeah. Right? Jimmy Garoppolo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's that strong connection with Coach Nagy.
Yeah, Andy right? Reid was his mm-hmm. His mentor in the coaching business, and they talk often. And Andy Reid, we were talking about it yesterday with Jared Payton, that he is one of the winningest coaches without a Super Bowl title. 221 career wins, that includes playoffs. And, the team, the Chiefs are certainly trying to win one for him because it's been a while. He hasn't been back in the Super Bowl now 16 years. It'll be his first appearance in 16.
Kickoff just after 5:30 on Sunday on Fox. A record 26 million Americans wagering on something or other connected to the Super Bowl. And the last numbers we had here indicated 52% of people betting on the Chiefs, 48% on the 49ers. That's pretty much how the odds makers are going so far.
Yeah, it's a point and a half. The over-under, if you're into that kind of thing, is 54.5. So you combine the two scores. If it's going over, you bet the over. If you think it's going to go under, you bet the under.
It's a close call in the WGN poll as well.
Oh, really? What are the results there, Mary?
Well, it's like, I don't know. It looks like 48-50 type of percentage, but yeah, we'll see.
Are you getting in on the prop bets, too? Which auto brand commercial will air first? Which food brand commercial will air first?
I'd like to do the Demi Lovato one to see how long the national anthem's going to be, because she really belted it out at the Grammys.
Right.
And she held her notes for a very long time. So I'm going to go, it's going to be a long national anthem. See, I would bet on that one.
See, I wonder if these artists know what the over-under is on the time. If they have somebody saying... Wait, 15 more seconds.
I don't know. They probably do have some time, but some of them like to just, let it go forever and ever. And I think Demi's going to do that. I have a feeling, because it's her big comeback year.
Yeah, I'm thinking about food already for Sunday, because my wife's out of town and I'm going to be by myself. I figured out if I'm invited to a party, I'll go for maybe the first half, because, I don't want to stay up too late.
By that time, it'd be 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right.
The halftime.
And I'm thinking, all right, well, I'll just get a pizza. But I can't wait till like late Sunday afternoon to get a pizza, right? Because I'll never get it. I'll get it Monday.
I was going to say, it'll come tomorrow, then the day after the Super Bowl, and then you'll be able, you can bring it in. It would be nice of you, but, wouldn't help you for Sunday.
I was cruising the frozen pizza aisle at my Mariano's yesterday, and I was thinking, maybe I'll do that. I mean, they've been getting better lately, but still there's nothing like, ordering a pizza from Malnati's or someplace, right?
Some grease on the box. You don't get that in the freezer.
And I don't want to cook.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to mess up the kitchen.
I'll tell you, if you're planning a Super Bowl gathering Sunday, think about moving it to the backyard, because they're talking about temperatures in the 50s now Sunday, and it's actually going to be sunny. As a matter of fact, we may even see a little bit of sunshine before that. But in the meantime, this is crazy, because this is, I think, is it the 8th straight day without sunshine? And people are, in a bad mood. Everybody's moping around. We need vitamin D. We have found, though, a possible solution to your lack of sunshine. And we're going to do this after the 6:30 news. It's a music treatment that I've come up with here, and it's guaranteed to make you feel better. So that'll be coming up at about in about 10 minutes. And if you can't stay in the car for that, or you got to go somewhere, you can listen to it later, because they podcast the show. They put it on WGNRadio.com after 9 o'clock, so you can check it out then.
I did notice some extra cranky people yesterday. I was in an apartment store, and there's a line where it says, wait till the next cashier number is called, and you go over there, and people were just cutting in front.
Oh, yeah.
They were just standing there for our health, and, giving me grief because I said something because I've been waiting there for 10 or 15 minutes at that point. You know, it's just, come on.
Yeah, it's the weather.
No excuse.
It's not cold. It's not messy out there, but it's the lack of sunshine. Cloudy today, cloudy tomorrow, probably cloudy the next day. Let me know if this helps. This is the only way we can simulate sunshine. We're going to try a little music treatment this morning. Is it helping yet? When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. Hang on, there's more. We'll try this. Maybe it'll get your vitamin D level going. And if you turn up the radio loud enough, could work. I'm not sure. Feeling better yet? Cause I just can't wait till you ride me, you're coming around. Now I'm walking on sunshine. All right, let me know if this next one helps even more. This could get the vitamin D going. Yep, it's helping. I can tell people are smiling here, even though it's cloudy today, cloudy tomorrow, mostly cloudy Saturday, partly cloudy Sunday, increasing clouds on Monday. You are the sunshine of my life. That's why I'll always be around. I'm sure Tom Skilling will be doing this on Channel 9 later tonight. It's the only thing we have here is sun in music. Hey, it's 6:49 now. The More Music Station. Sunshine came softly through my window today. Could have tripped out to see, but I changed my way. It'll take time, I know it, but in a while, you're gonna be mine, I know it, we'll do it in style. Now playing the most music, it's the Big 72, WGN. Sound you hear is Wally Phillips turning over in his grave. I've been waiting so long to be where I'm going in the sunshine of your love. All right, I hope that music treatment helped. No sun in the weather department. Let's get the latest from the newsroom. Steve, did it work?
Yeah, I feel a little bit better.
Okay.
I don't know about you. A little bit. Yeah, perked me up just a little bit.
Well, we're trying. And it's time for some extremely local news, courtesy of Block Club Chicago. Let's say good morning to Jen Sabella. How are you doing today, Jen?
I'm great. How are you, Bob?
Anxious to get into some of these stories because we got you covered, whether you're a bus commuter, whether you ride the L or a scooter.
Exactly.
Let's start with the Ogden bus. What's going on?
So in 2008, the CTA did a study of ridership all along the city, and they decided to cut the Ogden bus route, bus 157, which ran from Pulaski all the way into downtown, down Ogden. They just truncated it. So they cut everything west of California. People in North Lawndale were devastated by this. There wasn't a huge ridership at the time, and there actually was a population dip in North Lawndale at the time. But in the subsequent years, the population has come back, and neighbors have spent the last 12 years fighting to bring this bus back. And the CTA finally heard them out. They started going to every single meeting, all the CTA budget meetings. One woman, her name is Rochelle Jackson, she actually drew up, like, this is what it would cost for you to bring the bus back. She like had charts and graphs and salaries and all of this data, and she presented it to the CTA, and they agreed. So they're doing a pilot program to bring the bus back this summer, and it'll run the full route, and they're going to hope to get 700 rides a day, which would make it a sustainable bus route. And people in North Lawndale are thrilled. They said that the elimination of the route had really hit local businesses hard and just commuters. Like, they had to come up with a way to get to the train or get downtown for work. So, people are really excited, and it shows how much you can get done if you come together and show up.
So, good news if you are a number 157 bus rider.
Exactly.
and on the CTA beat here, let's talk about the train and the Red Line. Now, are the businesses along the Red Line happy about what's going on with the rehab? Because they're going to get improved streetscapes, new stations, and supposedly better transit service. What's the latest on this project?
So they're thrilled about the new stations. The Brown Line is eventually going to run over the Red Line. It's going to prevent a lot of stops up when you're like at Belmont, and all of the purple, red, and brown lines are all on the same tracks, and they're all switching, and you get slowed down. And the goal is for this to eliminate that backup and really speed things along. The problem for businesses is it will shut down some stations for 3 years. So there is a station, the Berwyn Red Line station, there's a really cute coffee shop underneath it called The Grind. They rely on people walking to the train every morning, getting their cup of coffee, breakfast sandwich, a bagel, whatever. And, you know, they're a little freaked out. So the city and Alderman Harry Osterman, they are coming together to try to help all these businesses around the impacted stops, which is Berwyn, Lawrence, Bryn Mawr, Thorndale, and they are training them. They're giving them Google and Facebook training so they can really up their advertising. Say, hey, we're still open, offer deals. They're going to put up signs. They're doing a new campaign just encouraging people to shop local, eat local, and not forget about these places so they can survive the 3 years of station shutdowns.
Yeah, they're saying 2024 is when it's going to be done.
Right. And it's a huge undertaking. And I think everyone at the community meeting, our reporter up north, Joe Ward, covered it. They understand that it needs to happen, and they're thrilled about what it's going to be when it's done. But the city's trying to step up and help in the meantime, because it's going to be a long 3 years for these businesses.
So right now on the weekend, the stations at Bryn Mawr, Thorndale, and Granville on the Red Line there are closed on the weekends?
Yes, and that will be pretty much indefinitely, and then they're going to start closing them permanently, but they will have temporary stations. So they're going to start construction soon on temporary stations at Argyle and I believe it is Bryn Mawr. And so there'll be a lot of reroutes, there'll be shuttles. The CTA is going to handle it and make sure everyone can get where they need to go, but it's just going to be a little bit complicated for a bit.
And the meeting is today, right? They're having a get-together about this?
Yes, they have two meetings today at St. Ida's Church at 5500 North Broadway. One meeting is from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., so anytime in there you can show up and find out what's going on. And also tonight from 4 to 8 p.m., also at St. Ida's Church at 5500 North Broadway.
Well, if you commute via scooter, there's some news. We were talking about this yesterday. They're coming back, but there's a big maybe on this, isn't there?
Right. So basically the city said, well, we have all the results of the pilot program study from last summer, and we don't know what this data means. So we're going to do it again and try to figure out if this is a good thing or not. 820,000 rides were taken last summer, primarily along the Blue Line. So on the west side of the city and northwest side of the city, there were 192 injuries reported. But they also found some positive things, like people were using these scooters to get to the train if they didn't live close to a train, instead of taking the bus, or if they just didn't live along a bus route. It seemed to be a good, like, in between, kind of like Divvy bikes. Divvy bikes are wildly popular now, and people were skeptical about them at first. But the scooters, they're going to work on this summer. They said they're going to work on all of them cluttering the sidewalks. I know I live in the scooter area, and they would just be, like, piled on the corner by the end of the night.
Yeah, they leave them everywhere.
Exactly, like, especially on the weekends. So the city said they're going to, like, crack down on that and make sure these companies are complying and that they're picking up after their scooters and they're making sure they're not leaving a big mess.
The initial test was the West Loop in that area.
Right.
This test is going to expand that?
They have not released the boundaries yet of the new test, from what I understand, but they are hoping to, specifically in communities that have big gaps in public transportation, to really roll them out in those areas. I know that people on the south side were like, hey, we want these scooters, so I'm not sure where they're going to be, and we'll let you guys know as soon as we get the map.
And when are they supposed to start this?
It will be in the summer, so I think June through October is when the pilot ran last year.
6:53, we're getting our extremely local news from Block Club Chicago. And Jen, let's move on to the next story, set in Woodlawn.
Yes. Yeah, so for the past few years, we've been covering the Obama Library and what its impact will be, the Obama Center, I should say, and its impact on the surrounding area. And the neighbors in the area have said all along, you know, we are thrilled to have this library, to bring all this, like, potential to our community and bring tourism from around the world. But we want to make sure we don't get priced out of our neighborhood. I think we saw this along the 606 trail in Logan Square, Wicker Park, and Bucktown. As soon as it went up, real estate prices skyrocketed. So after seeing that, neighbors were like, all right, let's get something in place that protects people who've been here for a long time. So for years, they've been working on this deal. It's an ordinance. It's been stalled in city council for months. And Alderman Jeanette Taylor kind of came out this week against the city's response to the ordinance. So the people in the community said, we want a 2-mile radius around the library to be protected. And that would mean, you know, making sure that some housing is preserved as affordable housing, making sure developers can't come in and kick people out of places they've lived for a long time. And the city came back and was like, how about 3/4 of a mile and 3/5 of a mile instead? Right now, there's kind of a war of words happening between the 20th Ward Alderman and the mayor's office. So we're going to see how this plays out. Alderman Taylor's encouraging people on the south side to be vocal, and the city's saying they're listening. So there's actually another meeting tonight at Hyde Park High School where people could come out and weigh in on the current CBA proposal, which is Community Benefits Agreement.
So you've got a lot of meetings to schedule your neighborhood spies to attend.
Exactly. This is what how they spend their nights.
Well, we're glad they do. So you don't have to out there. We don't have to. It's 6:55. Thanks to Jen Sabella, Block Club Chicago, supplying our extremely local news here in the morning. Have a good day, Jen.
You too, Bob. Thank you.
The news coming up momentarily from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Before we get to that, Andy Mazur's here for Dave Ennett today. I can't believe that Jay Cutler is giving media advice to Mitch Trubisky, that he's now a media consultant.
Yeah, I mean, it's a logical transformation.
What did
right?
he say exactly?
Well, he basically is reiterating what he used to say to the media. That's you know, not to read anything, not to listen to anything, and as he says, to go underground and take cover, kind of thing, and not to try to block out all the noise. Well, you know, it's kind of a do as I say, not as I did kind of a thing at that point.
No kidding. Yeah. Jay Cutler was on the Barstool Sports Pardon My Take podcast, and he was talking about Mitch Trubisky and how he works with the media, and he was giving him some advice, and it's pretty ironic because Jay did not exactly mellow in those press conference situations, did he?
No, and you know, you can ask guys like Adam Hoge, who will join us in the next hour, about how tough it was sometimes to do the job because of what you didn't get from the quarterback. I mean, obviously, the quarterback is a pretty high-profile position in the National Football League, and especially when you have a personality, or a lack thereof, of Jay Cutler, it kind of makes it a little more difficult to do your job.
Cutler said, for a young guy like him being in Chicago, it's a tough town. Expectations were huge, so you watch some of his press conferences and stuff. You could tell it really bothered him sometimes. Whether that affects him, I don't know how it affects him, but it has to somehow. The more he can get away from all that stuff, the better for him going forward. And then he said, go underground.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point in time this year you could tell that Trubisky's tune kind of changed with the media. He'd been very kind of affable and, not a great quote all the time. But when he came out of that game against the Rams, when everybody was wondering whether or not he was actually hurt, with that hip pointer that was talked about, and there was a lot of noise in the media and the fan base about the fact that he really wasn't hurt, didn't need to come out. It was poor performance. So I think at that point he kind of changed his tune a little bit and changed his attitude toward the media at that point.
Yeah, Cutler says, and this is the part that's so ironic, Jay says it's important for players to know the pulse of the public conversation about the team, even if it's shorthand from a team's public relations staff. Otherwise, players can get blindsided at news conferences. And of course, this morning we're hearing about Mitch Trubisky having shoulder surgery.
Yeah, torn labrum in the left shoulder, his non-throwing shoulder that was hurt in the game against the Minnesota Vikings in September, late September. And, it's interesting that Cutler was also talking about the fact that, yeah, you can try to avoid it, but someone's going to tell you. Mm-hmm. No matter what, whether it's your second cousin twice removed sending you a text message, or your wife or your girlfriend, someone's gonna hear it. And 99% of the time, what they hear and relay to you is not exactly what was said.
Of course.
It's a bad game of telephone, if you remember playing that game as a kid.
Yeah. All right. So there you have a Jay Cutler, media consultant. And the other sports story we're talking about today is the Chris Bryant situation, mm-hmm. which, as I understand it now, means the Cubs are more likely to trade him. Is that it?
Yeah. You know, I think they were kind of predestined either way. I mean, teams will be much more apt to acquire a guy that they have control over for at least a couple of years. And now with this ruling, Bryant not a free agent until after 2021, so it does make him a little more appealing.
Well, there you have it. There's the update. And overnight, the Sox didn't spend a few million on any more players.
No, they kept the wall closed for the time being, but you never know. Stay tuned.
Yes, right here. We'll let you know. Good morning. Bob Cerrato, 10 after 7. We're going to replay Mayor Lightfoot here and what she said yesterday in the wake of that shooting in the 4100 block of West Madison, where the police officer was wounded in West Garfield Park. This bears repeating, and everybody needs to hear these words, because I couldn't agree more with what Mayor Lightfoot said yesterday.
There's no question that the officers' work today in recognizing the danger that the community was in from the offender who was then fleeing the scene ended up saving other lives. And we owe him and the rest of the team a debt of gratitude. And anyone who ever doubts that our officers are courageous, are fearless, selfless, and run towards danger to serve the public, today is another testament to the fact that they do all of those things every single day, consistent with their training and their commitment to public service. So I just want to thank everyone involved. I'm glad that no other lives were lost.
And amen to that. We're happy to report, too, the officer expected to be released today. Undercover cop, been on the CPD force for, I think, 20 years. A young guy, just in his 40s. And what this made me think about was the fact that sometimes it's not this dramatic, but the men and women of the Chicago Police Department do yeoman's work all the time, day in, day out, 24/7. And you really only hear on the news normally about the bad stuff, because let's face it, you have to recruit from the human race, you're going to get a bad apple. But for 99% of the men and women on the force, they're great neighborhood Chicago people. They help, they really do serve and protect. And I know it's been my experience when I talk to these folks and compliment them, they all say the same thing. Hey, it's just what we do. It's just our job. They don't really want the praise or need the praise. They just put their head down and do the work. And unfortunately, most of the news coverage is about the problems, and you're going to have them in any big city, and we certainly have our share. But stories like this deserve a lot of coverage in the news. And then the stories that you don't hear about on the news, how these officers help so many people. Sometimes it's just helping some senior citizen up and down stairs somewhere, or retrieving a lost pet. It's not going to be the lead story on the news, but this is the great work they do that, in my opinion, never gets enough coverage. WGN Radio has been involved with the Fight for Air Climb for about 10 years now, and we're going to talk about this for a minute or two here with the executive director of the American Lung Association in Chicago, Kristen Young. Good morning, Kristen. How you doing?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I know that Dave Ennett, who's off today, is involved in this. Mary Vandeveld in our traffic center is involved in this. And for folks who don't know about it, what is the Stair Climb?
Sure. So the Fight for Air Climb is at Presidential Towers on Sunday, March 8th. Raises money for the American Lung Association. Everything from life-saving research, lung disease, education, and advocacy. We welcome over 2,000 people to climb Presidential Towers, and that building is kind of unique because it's four towers. So when you sign up, you can choose to climb one, two, three, or all four. So we really make you work for it, but when you climb all four, it's the largest stair climb in the city, over 180 floors, but just a great opportunity. And guess what? You get to take the elevator down, so at least we give you that.
I would hope so. Yeah. I know Ben Bradley and Demetrius Ivory from Channel 9 involved in this too.
Right.
And it's open to anybody who wants to help. Tell us how we can assist.
Sure. So you can visit fightforairclimb.org is the best place to register. It's $25 to register and $100 minimum fundraising. All of that going towards the American Lung Association and our fight against lung disease.
Now, how many flights of stairs do you should you be able to climb without passing out and to determine whether you're in good shape or not? What does the Lung Association say?
You know, a recent study came out that if you can climb, and walking, mind you, four flights, then you are, quote unquote, in a healthy spot.
Four flights.
Uh-huh. And we're asking you to climb. One tower is 45. So it's a goal. We're working towards it. But we don't ask anybody to run up the stairs. Walk, take your time, get some water, eat some snacks along the way. Getting to the top is the goal.
Yeah, and stair climbing, as evidenced by the popularity of the Stairmaster, this is one of the best ways to get in shape, isn't it?
Right, yeah. You can burn up to 11 calories a minute stair climbing. You know, this is kind of the new year, new you. Resolutions are flying left and right. But in a city like Chicago, although it's kind of balmy today, being able to be in the building and train in the stairwells on stair climbers is a great way to continue your workouts through the winter.
And once again, the dates and locations for the event?
Sure. Fightforairclimb.org. You can visit it to register. It's Sunday, March 8th at Presidential Towers. We also have a climb coming up next weekend, February 8th at Oakbrook Terrace Tower for those of you in the suburbs and looking for a good workout.
And all of this is really to raise awareness about the risk factors of lung disease. We all know about cigarette smoking by now, but there's more to it than that. And I'm always shocked, and everybody is, when you hear about lung cancer developing in someone who has never smoked. That does happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, and what about vaping? Is that an issue this year, too, as well, to add to the...
That's a huge piece. So to your point, Bob, the lung cancer piece, more and more people are being diagnosed that have never smoked before, and there's a big question mark as to why. And that's where a lot of our research dollars are going towards. So raising money for things like the climb really kind of lend itself to that. But the vaping epidemic is as you've heard, every day, getting worse and worse. And there are more teens smoking and picking up the habit than they ever have before. And there's so many questions around that as well. And it's certainly not a smoking cessation tool, no matter what they say, and something that we adamantly oppose as the Lung Association.
My dad died of lung cancer. He was 79, mm-hmm. and he was one of these guys, never sick a day in his life. We thought he was going to live to be 100. Mm-hmm. And I guess things have changed, though. He passed away many years ago. I guess now there is more protocol for chest x-ray. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you're 100% right. So there's a few criteria that we offer. So it's being within a certain age range, 55 to 80. If you've been a 30-pack year smoker, and if you are seeing some symptoms around lung cancer, that's an opportunity to talk to your doctor. CT scans are covered now by most major insurance carriers. So we're making it as easy and removing as many factors as we can so that people know what's a concern. They should be talking to their doctor. Lung cancer, as you may have seen, you know, could be a cough, could be something that doesn't appear to be this big, terrible thing. And these little symptoms start to add up. So it's worth talking to your doctor, asking the right questions, and seeing if you are part of that criteria that should get screened.
Now, this was more than 10 years ago, but in my dad's case, he went in for physicals, but they would not routinely mm-hmm. take a chest x-ray,
right.
which would have spotted something, I would assume.
Right, and now that they've kind of identified what is that criteria, if you're hitting those marks, that is enough for the doctor to be able to say, okay, we should really look into this further. But sometimes you still got to push. I mean, it hasn't been that long ago, to your point, that just wasn't as regular. Our hope is that this is going to become the next mammogram. It's something that is very regularly screened for, and catching it more stage 1, stage 2, which right now, unfortunately, it's more later stages that it's developed. And then the mortality rate, unfortunately, is still very high for lung cancer.
In my father's case, I still remember packs of Camels around the house, mm-hmm. but he probably started smoking as a teenager in Russia, but he quit. He quit like cold turkey.
Wow.
He was stubborn. He just said, I'm done. And he quit like decades ago, mm-hmm. but the damage, I guess, was done.
Well, and to your point, there's that stigma, right? When everybody said, okay, you're supposed to quit, people quit. But there's still the lingering effects that can happen. So I think as the Lung Association, we're trying to remove that stigma. Lung cancer is not just a smoker's disease anymore. In fact, we need to start preaching that this is something that anyone can get, like any other kind of cancer. And if you did smoke, it doesn't mean you deserve lung cancer.
Sure. Yeah. So. All right. Well, Mary, are you ready? You're in shape?
Mary, I think so. You know, first of all, I just wanted to say, some people might hear that you have to put $100 down to do it, and they might shy away from that. But tell people how the easiest way to do this is social media to get that money and help out.
You nailed it. So when you register, you get a link to your own personal webpage. You just two clicks, set it up on your Facebook, Instagram, any of your social media. You'd be so surprised. You know, you send an email out to your close friends and family, you post on social media, you might get your, you know, brother's cousin's high school teacher that says, oh my gosh, I've been affected by lung disease in some way and I'd love to support. So certainly we make it easy for you. You can also make a donation yourself, but we give you all the tips and tools to be able to post it very easily. And
yeah.
I wanted to say that WGN has one of my favorite team names, In It to Win It, for Dave Ennett. So, I mean, you guys are knocking it out of the park.
In It to Win It.
I love it.
And you can just go to the WGNRadio.com website and go to the Fight for Air Climb area, and you can join our team.
Thanks, Mary.
Kristen Young, Executive Director of the American Lung Association of Greater Chicago. Thanks for telling us about the event and also the latest on lung cancer and what's happening with the Lung Association.
Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Have a good day, Kristen. 7:25 right now. I want to catch up on some of your feedback. First, some texts. We were talking earlier about red light cameras and what happened to me. I saw the red arrow too late, and I backed up. I didn't complete the illegal left turn, but as I was backing up, I saw the dreaded flash. Well, a few texters have some advice for me here. Now, from 847, you will not get a ticket because you didn't go all the way through the intersection. They will look at that and not give you one. Well, I hope so. Someone else saying that they've done that several times and have not received a ticket. 815, you can probably fight it if the line isn't in the picture. Another one of you writing, they usually take two pictures. The second shows that you actually went through the intersection. Without that, you probably just got caught by the first camera, which will not result in a ticket. based on my experience. Okay, I hope so. And then regarding Super Bowl Sunday and ordering pizza, yeah, this is a good idea here. From 630, Bob, I stopped at Malnati's and grabbed two of their frozen pizzas for the Super Bowl. Don't have to deal with ordering food, and it tastes great. Now, there's your solution, yeah. Right?
Those things are great. When, I remember when I lived in California, they would send them to me for my birthday, and I would heat them up in the oven. They taste like you were there.
If you follow the instructions properly, it's pretty good.
It's all good.
And it certainly rivals any of the frozen pizzas you get at the grocery store, right? It's 7:27 right now. Oh, and I wanted to acknowledge an email here from Mary Doring of Lombard, who mentioned a Poison Squad, that American Experience documentary that I saw part of the other night that was unbelievable. Check this out. Find it on your television. American Experience PBS, the documentary called Poison Squad. Mary writing that she recorded it. Thanks, Bob, and you've lengthened my WJAN listening day. You and John in the morning. Very good. Well, thank you, Mary. Appreciate that. John Williams, of course, at 9 o'clock till noon now every day. Yeah, that Poison Squad documentary was really about this doctor who kind of led the fight for clean, healthy food back around, I think it was like the turn of the century, or maybe a little more recently than that. And he was finding, borax in food, formaldehyde, and what they were doing to our food and also to milk. Unbelievable. If you can find this documentary, it's based on a book, but the American Experience PBS show is called Poison Squad. I fell asleep watching it the other night, and then I recorded it so I can watch the whole thing another time. It's like you think there are problems today when you hear about romaine lettuce that's gone bad or E. coli outbreaks. Let me tell you something. Decades ago, it was far worse. And thanks to this one doctor, the Department of Agriculture began taking a closer look at what we eat and what we drink. So I recommend that for your viewing. You may want to do that after a meal, though, not before. You know what I mean? Coming up on 7:29 right now. Coming up, we'll check in with our pal Adam Hoag. He's in Miami doing Super Bowl work. And I guess Andy will find out what who they're interviewing today. Have they run out of stories? Have they run out of sidebars yet?
No, around this time, as you mentioned earlier, you start to interview each other. And a lot of celebrities will come by Radio Row. They usually wait till later in the week to show up to the Super Bowl. But there is never a lack of any kind of a story going on at the Super Bowl, because there's always someone to talk to.
And we'll find out what's going on today in Miami right after the 7:30 news. By the way, the phone number and the text number here, it's the same, 312-981-7200. And if you'd like to email us, it's bobshow@wgnradio.com. Dave Bennett is off, and Andy Mazur's here at the sports desk. And in Miami, Adam Hoag from WGN covering the Super Bowl. Andy, have you run into Lady Gaga or Snoop Dogg or Guns N' Roses? They're all scheduled to be at various venues doing some entertaining before the Super Bowl. How's it going down there?
Yeah, it's been going good. I haven't run into anybody like that. I think they try to stay away from us, Radio Row folks, as much as possible. The one thing I have learned in Miami is that Cuban cafecita is the HGH for sports writers.
Oh, you gotta talk to my wife. I mean, she'll direct you to all the great Cuban places there. And yeah, I am not a coffee drinker, but now I'm kind of hooked on that when I'm in Miami, anyway.
Yeah, it's really good, and it's been helping me get through a busy week, because Super Bowl week is always crazy. It's really fun to cover, but first of all, you have the game, which I know we'll talk about here, but there's always so many local angles too with the Bears, so kind of sorting through all that, there's a lot to get to.
Yeah, I know the one guy you did bump into was Kyle Long, and played some of that audio a little bit earlier, but I know your story is available on WGNRadio.com, but it was kind of interesting to hear him tell you exactly when he got hurt and what was kind of going into the thought process of retiring.
Yeah, you know, this is really the first long tenured bear that I've really covered from the very beginning of his career, from the point he was drafted all the way to the end where he's retired, and probably the only one of those players that stayed with just one team the entire time. So I've seen it all with Kyle Long, but even having been there for the ride, you kind of need to step back and talk to him. And I actually had a chance to talk to his father, Howie Long, who of course is a part of the Fox Sports team that'll be calling the Super Bowl on Sunday. And you just hear it all from them and the details of all the surgeries that he has gone through. You know, he played his first three seasons. I think he only missed one game in those first three seasons. He made three straight Pro Bowls. The Bears practiced against the Patriots that summer for a week in New England. And when that week of practice was over, Bill Belichick, of all people, told Howie Long, and by the way, his other son, Chris, was on the Patriots at that time, but he wanted to talk to Howie about Kyle, who was on the Bears, and told him that he might be the best guard in football. And that's the track that Kyle Long's career was on at that point before the unfortunate day in Tampa just a few months later. This was now November of 2016, when he just suffered such a bad ankle injury that we all knew was bad at the time, but we didn't know how bad it was. And Kyle told me yesterday that his doctor, Dr. Robert Anderson, who's one of the best foot and ankle surgeons in the entire country, told him that he might never play football again. And yet there he was week three of the following season out there. And he probably rushed it. He probably should not have been out there. But he was back out there. And that was just the biggest of many examples. I'll leave the rest to it, to the story, because there's just way too much to detail. But basically from that point on, Kyle was playing through all kinds of injuries, trying to gut it out. And eventually, I know a lot of Bears fans are now wondering why he's retiring. At just some point, he had to make that decision that he's got a lot more life to live, and going through another season where he's battling through injury is just too tough. And by the way, that includes this season, week two in Denver. He tore his groin and played two more games after that before eventually going on injured reserve.
A guy like that at some point has to think beyond football of how his life is going to be after the game. It's WGN Bears insider Adam Hoag in Miami. Andy Mazur's here for Dave Innitt today. And Adam, how close do they let you get to, like, where they're rehearsing for the halftime show? Where are you in relation to the Dolphins Hard Rock Stadium?
I'm actually out by the airport. Everything's kind of spread out. The media center, where we spend most of the week, is on Miami Beach, and then the teams could not be staying farther apart because the 49ers are actually training at the University of Miami's football facilities, which are closer to downtown, the Coral Gables area, where the Chiefs are up farther north because that's where the stadium is and that's where the Dolphins facility is where they're training. So everything's pretty spread out. When it comes to the halftime show, there's nothing more secretive than that. So they don't even let us close to the practices, really, the football practices, but it's super secret information what's going on with the halftime show because in many ways that's more important than the game.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam, you mentioned some of the local angles, and we've been talking a little bit about Jimmy Garoppolo, grew up in Arlington Heights, of course, went to Eastern Illinois. He had some interesting things to say the other day about still loving the Bears, and I'm kind of curious because I don't know if we ever really got a definitive answer about the Bears' interest in him in 2017 when he was made available by the Patriots. Was that ever close?
Yeah, I don't think it was ever close. I think the Bears were interested. I think they did their due diligence. But you got to remember the timeline there. So pretty much everyone knew that Garoppolo would probably be traded at some point in 2017. Most people thought that would come before the season because he was entering the final year of his contract with New England and he wasn't playing because he was, you know, Tom Brady's backup. So other than the time he had to fill in during that suspension after Deflategate, but he had shown enough in those games that, okay, there was some demand for him. And there was a lot of people, including myself in Chicago, who thought he'd be a great fit for the Bears. But what happened in 2017? Ryan Pace drafted Mitchell Trubisky. And if you remember that timeline, so if you're thinking like February or March of that year, that's when you would have had to have made a move for Jimmy Garoppolo. And the Patriots were actually being pretty tough on what they wanted, tough enough that they ended up not trading him until the middle of the season, if you remember, to the 49ers. So their trade demands were high, and in the middle of all of that, we all know the story about how Ryan Pace fell in love with Mitch Trubisky, and at that point, the Bears made the decision to go all in with Trubisky. At that, you know, then you certainly, you probably, with the assets you had given up there, you're not going to trade a whole bunch for Jimmy Garoppolo right after that. So that basically knocked the Bears out of the running. He ends up in San Francisco with the 49ers, and here he is in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be so frustrating for Bears fans to watch, I know, because Patrick Mahomes, yeah, of course, on the other side. And I know that the comparisons are going to go on forever. They're different guys, Trubisky and Mahomes. When you look at Mahomes handling what he's handling this week, he looks like such a poised guy that's been around forever. It's a rare kind of thing to see with a quarterback coming into his first ever Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I talked to his agent yesterday, Lee Steinberg, who the movie Jerry Maguire is actually based off of. And Lee's kind of in a second and final act probably as a sports agent. But what a client he ended up with Patrick Mahomes, wins the MVP last year, and here he is in the Super Bowl. Andy, that's exactly a question I brought up. By the way, we'll have this conversation on WGN Radio. You can hear it on Sunday leading up to the game, as I'll be on with my podcast partner Adam Johns from 1 to 5 p.m. But I said that to him. I go, you know, he's just never flinches, Patrick Mahomes. He is just so poised. It doesn't seem to – every player talks about treating every game the same way, but very few actually execute that. And Patrick Mahomes, to me, looks the same always, no matter how big the stage is. And it's very, very impressive to watch. And, you know, it leads me to believe that no matter what the outcome is Sunday – nothing could be more surprising than if Patrick Mahomes stumbles, if he doesn't play well. That would be the most surprising storyline that could happen because he's just been so good and so consistent.
Adam, talk a little bit about the security there. And in fact, Andy, you can compare this to what it was like when you covered the Bears' trip to Miami for their Super Bowl. What's the security situation been like this year, Adam?
Yeah, well, I mean, as heavy as always, you know, it's to the extent that even as reporters, we have to, when we submit all our information to get credentialed for this event, like the FBI does background checks on us just to be around anything that's official with the Super Bowl. And you know, it's when you walk into the convention center every day, it's like going through TSA security at the airport. And it's like that every single day. So that's really how it should be for an event of this magnitude. And, you know, the biggest thing is it's not just one day. It's not just the game. Now, the game, I haven't been around the stadium this week because it's so far away as opposed to the last 2 years in Minnesota and Atlanta when it was kind of right there. But at least the last 2 years, and I'm assuming it's only getting stricter and stricter, around the stadium, they set up like a 3 or 4 block perimeter. So it's not like a normal game where you just walk up to the gate and have to go through security. Like, you have to go through security 3 blocks before you even get near the stadium. That's the kind of perimeter they set up because it was such a big event, security is top of mind, as it should be.
Yeah, I remember being in Miami in 06-07 for the Bears, and we never saw the light of day, first of all, because you're always inside the convention center trying to get ready for reports and things. And then I'll never forget Dave Ennett and I sitting up in the auxiliary press box, which was actually in the stands with canopies over the top, because it was raining the entire game. It rained from the time we got there till the time we left.
And don't complain about the weather in Miami. You probably see sunshine.
No, I'm not complaining. You know, one guy, though, that is concerned about the weather is Robbie Gould, who kicked in that Super Bowl you were at, Andy. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him Monday, and he said, you know, the one thing he's hoping this time around in Miami, 13 years late, by the way, it's crazy, it's been 13 years, but he said he just doesn't want it to rain. Because that game back in 2007, like you said, it rained the whole game. But it certainly looked cool when Devin Hester returned that opening kickoff for a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about that. That was the moment you thought, okay,
here we go.
This is going to be a good one. Guess not. So what's on tap for today, Adam?
Well, and by the way, Dave Tobe, who was the Bears special teams coordinator then and is now the Chiefs special teams coordinator, so is going up against Robbie Gould in this game. Dave Tobe told me the other night that that's still the greatest moment of his life, and then he caught himself and he said, coaching life.
Right, uh-huh.
Good catch.
But it still resonates. So, you know, here in these last few days, this attention will start to shift more towards the game. I love the matchup. I especially love the matchup when you look at these offenses, because you look at the Chiefs, to me, that's the offense Matt Nagy really, really wants to run with Mitchell Trubisky in Chicago. And the 49ers, to me, are the offense that better suits Mitchell Trubisky, that maybe the Bears should be running with more run-heavy action and not putting it all on the quarterback's arm. So, you know, that's kind of the irony of this matchup as you watch it from a Bears fan perspective. But I think the 49ers are the more complete team overall, but obviously in the NFL, things usually side towards the quarterback, and the Chiefs have the better quarterback. I wouldn't underestimate the 49ers. As I sit here on Thursday, I'm kind of leaning towards San Francisco.
All right. More from Adam Hoge along with Adam Johns. The big Super Bowl pregame show will be on WGN Radio Sunday afternoon from 1 until 5 o'clock. Well, listen, Adam, regarding that FBI background check, if they find out you work at the same station I do, there's going to be trouble. So be careful, okay?
I'm assuming I passed because they let me in.
Yeah, well, they can always kick you out before Sunday. Thanks right. for the update.
All right. Have a great day, guys.
See ya.
All right. We'll talk to you down the road. The news will be coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Coming attractions here on the Bob Surratt Morning Get-Together, Dean Richards Entertainment Report. After the 8 o'clock news, Chris Stapleton is coming to Wrigley Field. Billy Joel has a crime report he's filling out. I guess somebody broke into his house. We'll get the latest on that. And also Billie Eilish at the Oscars. And there's a big controversy around James Corden. Does he really drive that car in carpool karaoke? America demands the answers, and we'll bring them to you right here. It is 8:09. Time to check in with Dean Richards and get the entertainment report. Morning, Dean. What's happening? Apparently, he's only doing a report for dogs this morning. We do have Dean's button pressed here, I believe, don't we? Check the disaster manual here, and Joe, the engineer, is in here making test sure the tin one, can two. Is wired properly. There he is.
Test one, two. Hello, test one.
Dean's
two.
Over at WGN TV. What's going on
Although
this morning?
Although you never know that I wasn't right in the same room.
Well, we edit this part out, so when the show's actually on the air, we go right to you.
That's why it seems like we make no mistakes.
Absolutely right. So listen, before we get to your agenda here, you know, I was reading about the 2020 Oscar-nominated short films and also the animated and live-action categories. And if you search, there are some theaters like the Music Box and Landmark Century and other places where they show these films that, you know, after the Oscars, you always think, don't you, wait, where can I see those? I didn't see any of those.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah, the Landmark Century is one. The Evanston Theater is another. Where they show a lot of the smaller and independent films. There's a theater in downtown Highland Park that...
Oh, the Renaissance Theater, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
they show a lot of these small films. For the life of me, I do not understand why they do not put any of these theaters in any South Side or South Suburban theaters. It's as if they think that if you live south of Madison Street, that you have no interest in any of these movies.
Yeah.
It's always been this way. It's nothing new. It's just always been this way.
There's one big one down near Roosevelt Road, and that's about it.
The Icon.
You're right.
Yeah, the Icon. But mm-hmm. if you live, in Oak Lawn, if you live in the Beverly neighborhood, further south in Orland, any of the south and even western suburbs, these movies just are not any place to be found. And I guess they must, maybe they just don't feel like they're going to get any return on their money. So, mm-hmm. it's unfortunate. Fortunately, all of these smaller films, if they're not already on some one of the online platforms right now, you can find them someplace on Amazon or Hulu or, you know, one of these places.
Yeah, so, I always want to see all the documentaries. Well, I feel coming soon, the Dean Richards Cinemas in the south and southwest suburbs, so we'll be watching for that.
That would be disastrous.
Before we get to the James Corden controversy, let's do a little concert update on who's coming to Wrigley Field and who's playing at the Oscars.
You know, it makes me feel good to hear about summer concerts being announced. Makes me feel like summertime is here, even though it's not even that bad outside right now. But a year ago, do you know we were like 23 below zero?
Yep, polar vortex. Uh-huh.
Polar Vortex, who I saw play at the United Center. They were fantastic.
Yeah, they're scheduled for Lollapalooza.
I love that. Summer. Just announced Chris Stapleton for country music fans, Saturday, August the 29th. Tickets going to go on sale on February the 7th for that show. So now that gives us Maroon 5 on June the 13th, Green Day, Fall Out Boy, and Weezer on August the 13th, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Poison, and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, not the Black Hawks, like I said on television earlier today, August the 28th. Then Chris Stapleton's the next day after that, and the Zac Brown Band will be on September the 12th. What's been your favorite Wrigley Field concert? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that you've been to some, right?
Police.
Police have been great.
Yep, that was a great show.
Elton John, Billy Joel for me.
Yeah, I saw Elton John, but not there. I saw him when was that, a year ago, and he was fantastic. He's coming back again, right?
Yeah, he's going to do one more as part of this 13-year-long farewell tour that that he's on. But the first when he and Billy Joel were first touring together in Chicago, the first place that they played was Wrigley Field. And it was a great show, but what I enjoyed even more was me standing outside of Wrigley Field and having people think that I was Billy Joel, because I get that all the time.
I can see that.
So, yeah, because Billy Joel's putting on a concert, so he's standing in front of the sports corner.
Well, I mean, the fact that you were singing Piano Man may have had something to do
with that. I may have been whistling it a little bit, but you know, if you think that if a guy's headlining a show, he's probably not at the Cubby Bear right before.
No. Dean Richards has the entertainment news and the Billy Joel crime report. What's the latest, Dean?
Yeah, poor Billy Joel. You know, he's kind of in residency at Madison Square Garden. Not a terrible, you know, thing to do. It's in his right in his backyard. He lives in Long Island in the New York area, but he's doing a show there last weekend. While he's doing the show, somebody broke into his house and damaged a dozen of his motorcycles that he has, busted the garage door, ransacked his home office, and damaged a dozen of his motorcycles. No arrests have been made. No comment from Billy Joel on this. He's been a motorcycle collector for quite a few years. And I'm going to say, given Billy Joel's driving record, maybe he shouldn't have that many vehicles.
Yeah, good thought. There's no evidence that the criminal thought it was your house because of the resemblance to Billy Joel?
It's entirely possible. That's why I'd like to offer my services to Billy Joel.
Yeah.
That if he's going to be away, that I stay at his house, I house sit, uh-huh, and just, you know, walk around and people go, oh, there's a bald guy. That must be Billy Joel. He's home.
Sure. Now let's talk about the Oscars 2 weeks, right? A week from Sunday, right?
A week from Sunday.
And as if enough great things weren't happening already for Billie Eilish, there's more.
Yeah, this is our day of Billie news that we have for you today. Billie Eilish won all these Grammy Awards this past Sunday, record-breaking month, took all the top awards. And now they just announced that she's going to be performing at the Academy Awards on February the 9th. They have not said in what capacity she will be performing. It doesn't sound like she's going to be presenting. It sounds like she is going to be performing, from what the Grammys have said in kind of a cryptic tweet that they put out. So I don't know if she's going to be singing one of the five original nominated songs for Best Original Song, or if she's going to be, you know, just doing a completely separate song. Who knows? Or, you know, maybe she'll do, you know how they always have somebody sing the song for the memorial segment? That almost seems very Billie Eilish. I know that sounds kind of ghoulish, but her songs are kind of ballady and moody and, you know,
depressing,
thoughtful, depressing.
Sometimes,
I guess you might say. I'm not familiar enough with Billie Eilish songs to know if there's one that's perfect for a memorial segment, but just based on kind of her overall sound, it seems
could
like
be.
That.
Do you think she'll change her hair color for the event?
Oh, from the green?
From the green and black.
From the green.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And whether she'll change out of those pajamas that she was wearing.
She looked like she was in The Wizard of Oz.
At the Grammys.
I thought.
Who knows?
Yeah. Is there anything more about a Kobe Bryant tribute at the Oscars, Dean?
There is going to be. The Academy did announce the other day that they are going to do something for Kobe Bryant. He is an Oscar winner. He won Best Animated Short 2 years ago. So whether he is, you know, part of just part of the memorial segment like everyone else, or whether they do something special for Kobe, which I suspect is what's going to happen, given the magnitude of this, especially in Los Angeles, that they probably will do something, but they definitely are going to do something to honor Kobe at the Oscars.
A lot of people last night and this morning brought to tears by Vanessa Bryant's Instagram message. Everybody's talking about that today.
Yeah, just beautiful. Mostly saying thank you to the millions of people who stopped to offer their condolences to her, their thoughts and their love. I love that she especially went out of her way to not only accept the condolences, but to share her own sadness and grieving, not only for her own loss, but for the other people who were also on the helicopter who died. I think that's, you know, speaks volumes about her, her family, and her state of being right now.
Yeah, and she also announced the formation of a fund to help support those families.
Right.
This is an interesting soap opera note. I guess people still watch these things, don't they? Days of Our Lives, going on and on.
Who knew that this? Have you been a soap opera fan? I never have been.
No. I remember at one time, I think maybe when I was working at Channel 2, I did a story about the hoopla surrounding Luke and Laura on General Hospital.
That was a big deal.
Yeah.
That was a big deal when that story.
And then there was Erica Kane, of course.
Erica Kane.
Always never winning awards.
Never winning anything. My only exposure to them, I've just never been a fan. I know a lot of people like them, and apparently still do. When I was homesick, when I was in school, and you'd be forced to watch those. There's like a short, like, hour or something when there were no game shows or reruns or, you know, something basically incredibly stupid to watch. And you'd have to watch a soap opera. And apparently Days of Our Lives was one of those, because they just announced that it has been renewed for its 56th season.
That's
on
crazy.
The air. That's unbelievable that this show has been on the air. It's NBC's longest running shows. It has to be one of the longest running shows, period, in the history of television, I would think. But they were saying that that they might move it over to NBC's streaming service this year, but they made the announcement it's going to stay on the regular air. It's won 57 Emmy Awards during its run.
I think that's one of those situations where no NBC executive wants to be the one to have to pull the plug on his watch or her watch.
Don't want to be the one guy that killed Days of Our Lives.
That's right. And I remember you mentioned being home watching a soap opera because there's nothing else on. You're homesick from school. That reminds me, I'd be homesick and ready to watch a Cubs game, and then it's rained out. There's no game. Canceled, and then you start watching shows like Days of Our Lives.
Days of Our Lives or those old newsreels.
I like what Channel 9 used to run during rain delays. Dow Finsterwald's Golf Tips. That was a highlight. I wonder if that's still in the vault there. Check that out.
Yeah, mental note to current WGN management. We still have those, and I'm pretty sure they're in public domain. You don't even have to pay rights for them anymore.
Now on to the controversy about carpool karaoke.
This is huge.
We saw this coming the other day. What's the latest?
This is huge. This story first broke a couple of days ago on Twitter when somebody posted a video of James Corden from The Late Late Show on CBS filming outside on the streets of Los Angeles. And, you know, if you've seen these carpool karaoke's, what it looks like when you're watching it is James Corden behind the wheel of an SUV with a famous celebrity. And they put on music, and they, you know, they sing karaoke. They sing along with the music that is, you know, supposedly coming out of the radio. And it looks like James Corden is driving the car when you see this. But somebody on the street saw all of this going on. Justin Bieber happened to be in the car. So, you know, fans spotted him. And what they actually saw was the SUV with Corden and Bieber in it on a trailer being towed around the streets and filmed. That's how they do a lot of the film sequences for, you know, movies that where you see people inside the car, you know, that sort of thing. It's all done on a trailer, so the actors are not actually controlling the car. But, you know, it's a huge, big expose that James Corden addressed on his show last night.
I know this looks bad. But I just want to say right now that I always drive the car unless we're doing something where we think it might not be safe, like a dance routine or a costume change, you know, or if I'm drunk, right? But in the case of Justin Bieber, it was a safety issue where we thought it was best to tow the car, right? And frankly, I just kept getting lost in his eyes, okay? Look, I'm just shocked I've done something that upset people more than cats, right?
My favorite, James Corden, who is in the movie Cats. That's been nothing but trashed from day one.
Who cares if they pull the car? What's the difference?
What's the difference? But, you know, people, you know, whoever caught it on a cell phone video, you know, it's clearly shot from the street, and you hear somebody going, "Hey, it's carpool karaoke. Look, they're shooting it, but there's Justin Bieber and there's James Corden and shooting it." But the video that was tweeted of this, you know, quote expose, has been viewed 13 million times. Hmm. 13 million times. James Corden, in his explanation last night, said that's more people than view the actual carpool karaoke when when they broadcast it or put it online. More people watch the expose video.
You know, the bigger scandal for me is, and I think this has been seen even more times, the tremendous segment he did with Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah.
And then it turns out, as you know, Dean, it turns out that the house they went to was not really that person's house. So there was a lot of fakery there. I mean, it's a wonderful segment, and you can still find it online. But
right. But
to me, that is a lot more interesting than this karaoke carpool scandal.
Well, you know, it's January, Bob. We need a good scandal right now.
Yeah, of course.
It's very slow in the scandal department, and everything just slows down in January in the entertainment land. Until the Oscars are over, there's nothing going on. So even the smallest scandal, you know, we can fluff up and, you know, make into a huge thing. That McCartney, that whole series that he did with McCartney, and then didn't he build it into like a two-hour special?
Yeah, they ran it as a CBS
something
special.
Like that.
It's a wonderful show.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was really great. Well, you've got the Super Bowl halftime show. There's always a chance of a wardrobe malfunction. So
let's hope.
Scandals are coming.
I need scandals.
Yeah.
If anyone's got a scandal, please you know, send it in.
Dean,
we appreciate that. We're looking forward to that. Jennifer Lopez and Shakira. How can there not be a wardrobe malfunction? I mean, with Jennifer Lopez, how would you even know if there was a wardrobe malfunction?
That's a good point.
On a good day, she's exposing most everything anyway.
We'll be watching, and Dean Richards will be on the scene. He'll have the stories for you on
go.
Channel 9 and WGN Radio. Thanks, Dean.
All right, guys.
Have a good day. Coming up, we'll talk to the Blackhawks head coach, Jeremy Colleton. And right now, we'll get you caught up on all the news. And also, before we get out of here at 9, 42nd Ward Alderman Brendan Riley. He's the downtown alderman. We'll check in with him about a lot of matters concerning the city, like those scooters and other things. So stay right here. The Blackhawks reconvening in Arizona. The All-Star break winding down here. And also they had a bye week. And Saturday night, back in action against the Coyotes. And the Blackhawks head coach, Jeremy Colleton, joins us now. Good morning, Jeremy. Did you enjoy the break? What did you do? How'd you spend your time?
Good morning, Bob. Well, got a little time with the family, which was lovely. Hang out with the kids and whatnot. And so a little mental break, too. A couple days not thinking about hockey, which is rare. I mean, probably didn't go the whole day, but still... Yeah. It was good, and now I think everyone's going to be really fresh and excited to get back to work here and playing some big games.
All right, let's get to that. Andy Mazur is here for Dave Bennett this morning. Andy?
Yeah, Coach, I was just wondering, too, I mean, about that, when you're going to reconvene and when everybody gets back to work, and how excited you are to begin this stretch now. I mean, you're going to play a lot of road games, but that playoff carrot is kind of dangling in front of you guys.
Yeah, we're right in the mix. We've played pretty well for a stretch here, and found a way to get points and you know, multiple games where we, you know, we get 2 points, and that's allowed us to be in striking distance. Now it's really important that we pick up where we left off, and you know, with the performance, and I feel like if we do that, we're going to continue to get wins. I think you know, with this game here in Arizona, it's against a team that we're chasing, but it's also it's a chance for us to show that you know, how we've been playing before, that's us. Now, that's not you know, it was not a mirage as far as our ability to play well and do it consistently. So that's an exciting opportunity.
You know, the break came at a weird time for you, too, because you guys were playing, as you pointed out, you're playing very well, 5 of your last 6. But did it give some of your injured guys a little chance to get a little bit closer to getting back into the lineup?
Yeah, and we'll have a little bit better idea of that once we, you know, practice and see how they look once, you know, we're going to test the guys over the next couple of days to try and get that, shake the rust off. But even the guys who, you know, saw it just came back, I think it was important for him to have a couple days of rest, even though, you know, he was feeling good and didn't seem like there was any issue when he did come back to play. But it's just nice to get those extra days to really push you to feeling totally 100%.
Did you get a chance to watch the All-Star game and Patrick Kane putting on a little bit of a show again? Unfortunately, the Central Division just can't seem to catch a break, though.
Well, it's a great, obviously, thing, you know, for the fans and whatnot. I didn't watch. I did see some highlights, and obviously, Kaner, he typically rises to the occasion in those situations, as we know. So that was fun to watch, you know, the reaction from all that. But, you know, I think everyone's excited to play real games now.
So I'm imagining a scenario in the household during the break where the NHL All-Star Game and the festivities are on TV, and Jeremy, you're prevented from turning on the set. Does that happen?
Well, it probably could have happened hypothetically, you know. But the good thing is with the way they do the bye weeks, you know, there's still games on. So I think it's good for the fans that it's not like 10 days without games. You know, half the league takes their break before the All-Star break, and half the league after, so, and that's good. So I've still seen some hockey lately.
Coach Jeremy Colliton, and let's go get him starting Saturday night. Thanks for the time this morning, Coach.
Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
And Alderman Brendan Riley is here from the 42nd Ward. Good morning, Alderman.
Good morning.
Refresh everyone's memory, the boundaries. You're the downtown guy, aren't you?
Yes, sir. So the Gold Coast, Navy Pier, Streeterville, Grant Park, the Loop, River North, and the Near West Side. So, yeah.
And that brings us to our first topic, one of our favorites, traffic. Now, you go to other cities, and I think of New York first, and there are signs everywhere, don't block the box.
Right.
I've never seen that around here. Is that what we're going to do now?
Yeah, we actually have a law on the books. You wouldn't know it. Because there's hardly any enforcement, but it's a $200 fine for blocking the box. And this is when vehicles pull into the intersection and the light changes and they're blocking oncoming traffic. You're right. Other big cities actually spend a lot of time on enforcement, and they put up a lot of signage. We only have, I think, 3 or 4 signs in the Loop that actually say, don't block the box, $200 fine. Years ago, under Mayor Daley, we had a special squad of police officers that would rove the Central Business District enforcing intersection management, and it worked. But for some reason, I don't know if it was a budget cut or it was a collective bargaining issue, that program ended. And as a result, especially compounded by all the rideshare cars that are coming downtown now, it's really become a mess. And so I've spent a lot of time talking with Mayor Lightfoot about it. She agrees 100%. And so we're going to get some extra enforcement added to that.
Can't you use people so you don't tap in on the already strapped resources of the police department? Can't you use people who are not police officers?
My preference would be to use the traffic control aides. But because of the collective bargaining agreement, they're not allowed to write tickets for moving violations. And technically, blocking the box is a moving violation. But the idea here is not to pull police officers away from higher priorities like, you know, crime in progress, but to have a dedicated unit that ropes. They don't have to be just dedicated to downtown. Pick 20 intersections a month, enforce those real well, and then move on to the next 20. But I think when there's some level of enforcement, people will think twice. Hey, I might get a ticket for the first time ever. Let's not block the box. And that'll really help improve traffic flow downtown.
Hopefully. By the way, we were talking last time you were here about what I termed the mystery corners on State Street, where you saw these poles and the painted corner. Mm-hmm. And you explained what that was.
Yeah.
I've seen those in other parts of the city now. Now, you were saying that's really a State Street project, but I've seen them everywhere now. Talk again about what they're there for.
Sure. So, and it looks kind of strange. You've got a different color paint on the asphalt, and you've got these plastic bollards. Those are actually intended to calm traffic, slow folks down a little bit. They narrow the intersections for pedestrians. Those bollards offer a little bit more protection for the pedestrian. They have a shorter amount of distance to traverse the intersection. They improve safety. You'll see these cropping up more around schools and parks where there's lots of kids, but these are a temporary solution. These are reversible. So if we determine that this is not a good improvement, we can take it out. If we think it's working well, we can make it a permanent improvement with concrete and curbs and those sorts of things.
And who's going to make the decision on whether to expand this program?
That's really a call that's made by the local alderman and the Chicago Department of Transportation. What we do is we're data-driven. So we look at crash data to see how many pedestrian crashes we've had, bicycle and car, all of that. And if we see the needles moving in the right direction, that tells us this is probably a good permanent improvement to make.
Talk a little bit about this community meeting on marijuana dispensaries. Is this about where they're going to be allowed to open?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be discussed here?
So actually, last night was our second community meeting. The River North Residents Association is the neighborhood association of record for the area where all these folks want to be. They're managing a community process where each of the dispensary owners comes forward, explains their plans, how they're going to secure their location, what impact that might have on quality of life, and then they answer a lot of questions. So we've already had two dispensaries go through this process. The Neighborhood Association will vet those and then send a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals. Aldermen don't serve on that. So this really won't be up to the local alderman. It's going to be up to the folks that serve on the Zoning Board of Appeals. They'll decide whether this complies with the zoning code. And then it's up to the state of Illinois then, after these are built, to determine whether or not they get their license or not.
A couple of my kids are out in Southern California, so I've been to MedMen. Mm-hmm. That's the big chain in many parts of the country, including Los Angeles. Of course, I was just there doing research, Alderman. But it's my take on this that those facilities, those dispensaries, are run pretty well, and they're clean, and the security is great, and it certainly doesn't look like any kind of fly-by-night operation.
No, these are professionally run, and if you go into one of these, it looks a lot more like a pharmacy or an Apple store.
Exactly.
Than it does a head shop,
it
right?
It sure does.
And if you meet the corporate folks, the folks in the C-suite for each of these big companies, they're all from Fortune 100 companies. These are not a bunch of hippies hanging out.
Right.
So this is a serious business, and they're trying to destigmatize cannabis, right? We were all raised to think that's evil, right? You know, mm-hmm. reefer madness and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they want to take the stigma away from that because we've seen in the medical space, this helps people manage pain, sleep, appetite, all those things. They believe that this can translate into the lifestyle management as well. Wellness, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm looking at it as a revenue proposition for the city of Chicago. I think with our architecture and our food culture here, plus cannabis. This could be one of those marijuana destinations like Denver or Seattle or Portland. And we're better than those cities. So I see this as a real upside for Chicago.
Here's what I'm worried about, and a lot of people are too, and I don't know whether you've talked to the police officials about this, people driving when they're high.
Right.
There's no test for that. And how are we going to deal with that?
As I understand it, the state police in Colorado and in Oregon are testing a device that actually can measure the concentration of THC in your saliva.
So
your
like tongue. A breathalyzer.
Much like a breathalyzer.
For marijuana.
And actually, it's sensitive enough, it can actually tell the officer how recently that person consumed. So I don't know that the state police here have that technology yet, but I can assure you it's coming. And that's an area that we're going to have to figure out at the state level, how they're going to enforce that, what qualifies for a vehicle search or not. That's kind of uncharted territory. But I do know the technology will be coming here soon.
That's a better idea than my idea, which is a bit primitive, where the police officers, if they suspect you of driving while high, they bring a bag of cookies to the car. And if you just dive into the bag, they take you right downtown. Let's talk about what's happening today. I know you didn't get dressed up for me. Another restaurant opening. We have a lot of great ones in Chicago, and we're getting another one, aren't we?
Yeah, we sure are. Thanks to Rick Bayless, one of our local superstars. I'll be going and joining him over at Willis Tower later this morning. He's opening a new restaurant called Tortazzo, and apparently they make these incredible sandwiches. So that'll be a good event. It'll be good for Willis Tower, which is completely repurposing the building. It's a $600 million investment they've made, and when they're done, that is going to be a fantastic destination for tourists.
So this is going to be all lobby-level shops?
Lobby-level shops, actually multiple levels. But yeah, it's going to be a huge atrium when they're done with it, and it's going to be an absolute destination.
Are they going to be working on this all year?
Yeah, they've actually been working on it for the last year and a half. They still have a lot more work to do. But it's a very ambitious project. It's, I think, the biggest reinvestment in an existing building in the history of the city. So I'm excited about it.
I had an uncle who had a clothing store right there on the site of Willis Tower. I almost said Sears Tower, but that area and that whole South Loop, West Loop, I mean, what's happened there has been phenomenal, hasn't it?
It's an incredible success story. Yeah, it shows that the economic development is progressing further from the central core. Right now, it's heading mostly west and south, and that's great. So, yeah, I'm excited. I think things are going pretty well downtown.
My Uncle Abe would have never believed it. Alderman Brendan Riley, always good to catch up with you. Have fun today with Rick Bayless.
Thank you very much.
And coming up, we'll get to the news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and also a preview of today's John Williams Show. The Wintrust Crosstown Series Arizona Fan Flyaway. This spring, Chicago's hometown baseball rivalry does head to Arizona. You could be the lucky fan to win a trip for two to Phoenix, including airfare, hotel, and tickets to the Wintrust Crosstown Series game. That'll be on March 13th. You can register right now. Just go to WGNradio.com/contests. It's sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Time for John Williams Crosstalk now. Good morning, John.
Don't want to brag. Wintrust tweeted at me yesterday. One of the first times a major American corporation tweeted at me, wanted my attention.
Did they just notify you that you were overdrawn?
Yes.
In your checking account?
Yes, we're actually rather embarrassing. It was on Twitter. No, they heard me complaining about the fact that I don't like some ATM fees, and they said, hey, we don't have ATM fees, even out of network, as I believe. So I said, well, I retweeted that.
Yeah, I would hope so.
That's compelling.
Yeah, some banks will take that charge off.
Yeah,
if you're right. A good longtime customer, perhaps.
Yeah. By the way, Senator Dick Durbin's going to join us in the next half hour. We'll talk a little bit about his view of the impeachment trial. He's the senator from Illinois, of course. I wish we had a Republican senator. We don't. We did reach out to Senator Johnson from Wisconsin. I think he's going to join us this week. Some Super Bowl commercial chatter on the show today. We'll play some of your all-time favorites, and you'll laugh and cry after the news.
Do me a favor. Tell Senator Durbin that I still think he should be a TV host. He'll know what you
really
mean.
That's an
that.
Inside
yeah.
joke with
yeah,
you guys.
Just tell him I think so.
I've seen him host a little political show, and he does a good job.
He's a little too smooth. Thank you, John. We'll be listening. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.